Church, glad you could be here today. We are working our way through a series on what it means to hear from God and different ways He communicates to us. We've talked about different avenues. We've talked about the Bible and the Scriptures and other friends. And today we're going to look at something that is actually very difficult. The Bible gives us instruction in this, but honest, this is one of the hard things to do. But there are hard things, there are trials and difficulties that happen in life. And the apostles talked about how we should look at those and how God uses those in life. So I want to start right off in the book of James. I want to read this first before we pray. I don't have this up here. If you can pull the Bible out in front of you, if you have an NIV version, I think that's the one I have here. If you could pull that out, I want to read James 1, the first, see if I can find it, the first, here it is, first four verses. Everyone got it? Got a Bible? Okay. I'm going to start in verse 2. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. So I thought about this title, hearing from God. And sometimes we think about, oh, just hear something. I want to hear a message. I want to get some information. I want to get what I need to know. If you look at the reasons he talked about in James, there's much more than going on in God's use of trials than just hearing something. And that's where we're going to go today. That's what we're going to look at. Hearing is part of it, but there's a transforming process we're going to look at. So why don't we stop and pray that we would come away with a different view of God's work in our lives. God, I thank you that you waste nothing. You use everything for good in our lives. Thank you that you use trials. Help us to understand how that works. Help us to trust you in this. Help us to trust the truth in your word. Amen. So if I look back at those three verses, 2 through 4, there's three things, there's three reasons God brings trials in our lives. There's three reasons he allows them. The first one, he is very specific about. He says, it's a test. He allows trials to test your faith. Number two, he allows trials and difficulties and struggles to cultivate perseverance, to bring about, to grow perseverance, to keep going, to not quit, to not throw in the towel in your life. And last but not least, to bring about perfection. So after today, if you get everything I covered today, you will still not be perfect. But it is God's plan. I don't mean perfection, that you're going to be perfect, but to move you in that direction, that you can look back and you're more mature today, a year from now, in your faith, in how you relate to God, than you were a year ago. So we're going to look at these individually and then go a few other places in the reason and how God uses trials. So first I'm going to look at 1 Peter, the book of 1 Peter. This is in verse 6. This theme is very consistent. In this, you greatly rejoice. They do this all the time. You have all these struggles in your life, you greatly rejoice. See, this is the unnatural part that doesn't happen naturally. For what's our first impulse when hard things happen? Great. Though now, for a little while, you may have to suffer all types of trials. These have come so the proven genuineness of your faith, of greater worth than gold, which is refined by fire. He's comparing faith, the genuineness of your faith, to an earthly material thing. Gold was the most valuable thing in this culture. Now it's platinum, of course, but here it was gold, which perishes. He's saying gold is perishable, but the genuineness of your faith will result in praise in this life and the life to come. He says, this is very important. This is one of the reasons difficulties come. So one of the reasons, one of the reasons trials are allowed and God brings them and allows them into our lives is to test our faith. This is what 1 Peter 1:7 says. They're allowed in that our faith being genuine could be revealed. How many of you have taken a test? I've taken a test. How many of you like taking tests? Wow. You guys are weird. What do tests do? You can sit in class. I've sat in class. If you go to high school or college or seminars, you can be in class. You can get the material. But what does the test do? The test reveals if what you've learned, if what you've listened to, if you can apply it and solve a problem. If you can take that and apply, a test reveals the reality of if you understand this and it's yours and you can use it. Being in the class, test is very revealing. That's why we do them. We could graduate people from high school or college if you just sat in the chair. We could do that. We don't. Because we know that's not enough. We need to know this works in life. You know, when I was in college, I went to school at Purdue University. I have two engineering degrees from there. And I had a statics and dynamics class. Statics is the study of forces and things that don't move. The dynamics class introduces the study of forces when things are in motion. And it was a 7:30 a.m. class, early in the morning, you know, for a college student. And it was half a semester. The first half I did very well. I went to the class, I got up. Professor was not that inspiring. But I went, and I learned. And the first test at the end of statics was a disaster. First test, the professor was handing, he was not happy, you could tell. I think the average was 120-point test. The average was in the 50s or 60s. Most of the class got less than half of the points. And that's pretty invalidating as a professor, but he was not happy with the class. And he walked around and I remember we had to figure out this structure and the force in this structure. You want to know something? I got it right. I got it right. He goes, you guys all did terrible except for Mr. Claypage. 120 out of 120. I was the only one in the class to figure it out. I remember figuring it out. Standing at this big structure, all these beams. I'm going, there's no force in this. I can tell. I got to come up with some formulas to prove my point. And I did. I was the only one to get it right. I got it. And I did well, and he was happy. It was validating. He was a good professor, at least for one kid. The next half of the semester started. It was a split class. Dynamics, 7:30 in the morning. Uninspiring professor. College, lots of friends. I stopped going too often to class. I'll go next week. I'll go to the study hall. I'll read the book. I'll catch up. I'll figure it out. Okay, I'll take the test. 120-point test. He looks at me. He hands the test back. What happened? Was his words to me. He had high expectations. I was the one who figured it out last time. What happened? I got a 36 out of 120. That was close to the average. The class did terrible. The class did terrible, and there was no one kid who made him a good professor. What happened? I didn't go. I didn't learn, and I could not apply it to life. This is true in faith. Tests come. Is the point of the test to make you feel bad? Is the point of the test to show you that you're not smart? That you failed? No. The point of the test is to reveal where your faith really is and what you need to do. That's the point of the test. I could do better. I could go to class. I could read the book. There's things you may need to do. This is why God allows tests. Nothing will be revealed without a test to see how it applies in your life. So, James, this is from the chapter we read at the beginning, because you know the testing of your faith. So you have the testing. The testing has a result. The testing of your faith produces perseverance. This is the next result. This is the next thing God wants. Does God want to talk to you? Does he want to speak to you? Yes. What else does he want? He wants to produce perseverance in your life. So another reason that trials come is to produce the ability to stay with something, to not throw in the towel, to not quit. This is what James 1:3 says. And these work with each other, testing as you pass more tests, as you learn that you can do that, as you learn that you can survive, how to study, how to apply truth in your faith, you become more more consistent. You don't give up as easy. You don't think, oh, I can't do this. No one's here. God's not here. You trust God more and the circumstances less. Part of persevering, part of learning this, part of trials is if our faith is in the circumstance, pretty easy to be discouraged. If we trust that God can use the circumstance and we can learn from it, okay, this is going to be used for good in my life. So second reason to cultivate perseverance. That was James 1:3. James 1:4, next verse. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete and not lacking anything. Testing produces perseverance. Perseverance has to finish this and you become more mature. You learn to persevere. You learn to keep going. You become mature and complete, not lacking anything you need to live the life you really want to live. This is what trials do. Trials introduce this opportunity to grow. So last reason that trials come is to bring us to perfection. And again, I don't mean that you're going to be perfect, but to move you toward a more mature view that you're doing and you have confidence today that you didn't have a long time ago. When I went to college, I grew up in a mainline denominational church, and I went and I just didn't learn what I needed to learn, and I said, I'm going to go somewhere else. And I went to our college group, and that's where I met Mike at Purdue University. I met Mike there, and I started going, and I liked the meetings, and we would have a prayer meeting and this stuff at night, and we'd have fun and whatever, and I go, oh, this is great, great. And I'd wake up in the morning, the next morning, and I'd go, What crazy group have I signed up with? Why am I with these crazy people doing this weird stuff? We stayed up late on Saturday and we prayed for hours. That's weird. No one else is doing that. That's weird. No other. What are college students doing? I'm doing this with these weird group. And I would have doubts. I would have doubts. Like, well, is this really real? I would have doubts in college. It's a little bit later in my life. I don't doubt those things now. I still have doubts about certain things and if God's going to use them, but not in those things. I'm still with a crazy group of people. But I don't doubt these things. God wants this for us. This is part of being mature. This is part of having more confidence in the future. In the future. Okay, so those are the three reasons that God will use trials. So really, the title in this series, How Does God Communicate With You? It's not really adequate to explain what God is trying to do through trials. He's trying to do much more. He's trying to create testing that creates perseverance, that creates maturity. Not just give you a message. He wants to use this process to transform your life and your thinking and your beliefs and your behavior into something that is aligned with Him. So I'm going to move into how some of the apostles looked at this area of trials. Because it is not natural. If you look in yourself and something bad happens, these things, you don't, oh, this is, and I want to look at some of these things. This is from Paul. This is a letter he wrote to the church in Corinth. This is in the second letter in chapter 12. This is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses. This is very different. I worked for a construction company, and we did a lot of big things, but weakness was not something that you could be too open about. Weakness was not good. Weakness was not good. Paul says, I delight in my weaknesses, in my insults, in hardships, in persecutions. I delight in them, in difficulties, for when I am weak, then I am strong. He's saying, okay, if my weaknesses are revealed before God, who uses everything for good, He will use this opportunity to cause change. I let God do this in my life. A very different perspective from our first reaction to any time anything bad happened. I want to continue down this road in James. This is what we read right at the beginning of the service today. I want to look at these first four words. Consider it pure joy. We went through the second half. When you face trials, the trials produce testing of your faith. Testing produces perseverance. Perseverance produces maturity. All these things work together. I want to look at the top, these four words. Consider it pure joy. This word consider is very interesting. There's the same phrase, consider, same word as in Romans 6:11. He says, consider yourselves able to live, dead to sin and able to live to the glory of God. Here he says, consider it pure joy. This is not a natural view. Your flesh will never want to do this. It will never say, oh good, a flat tire, oh good. My kids used to joke with the Iwana camp out. It didn't rain this year. It didn't snow, it didn't rain. But we used to joke that, because it would always be some type of inclement weather, thunderstorm. It would always like rain. My tent was old and be raining inside the tent. And we go, oh great, I'm getting wet inside the tent. Consider it pure joy. Are they just trying to create frustration in us? Because we naturally are, goes, oh, why did this happen? Why am I in this struggle? That's our natural way we respond to difficulties. And the word is rather interesting. It's a derivative of the word lead. And a short translation is, I lead, this verse, to consider it. I lead, which is not going, okay, it's all good. All this bad stuff is good. It's a conscious, deliberate decision of how to look at these things. It's not a flippant switch. I should be happy about all this stuff. It's okay. It's to consider. Actually, if you were a mathematician, you would apply this saying, consider all the facts and come up with the conclusion. Run the numbers. Run the calculation. That's what this implication is in the Greek, to lead. It's not a quick thought or a quick decision, but a deliberate way to lead your thoughts and your perspective that God is going to use this for something I cannot see today, if you need to be happy in your circumstance today, it becomes very difficult. So we have a choice with our trials. We have a choice to make on where you can't control every thought that comes into your head. Thoughts come in your head. Emotions show up. You can't control what they are. You can control what you dwell on and what you think about and what you choose to spend your thoughts on over time. We need to choose to trust God in faith and grow. When something hard happens, it's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. We're going to have to figure out, what are we supposed to do? Can God use this? God is going to use this in my life. There is another option. You can choose to trust God, or you can choose to become bitter, numb, and distant. You can be angry at the people who caused the problem, and sometimes there's true injustice. Sometimes it's okay to be upset or righteously indignant. But if you become bitter, numb, and distant, you can move away from God's purpose. How can you tell? How can you tell? How can you tell the difference if you can see that God, there's an opportunity for us to grow? You can tell the difference. When people become very bitter and totally obsessed about the circumstance and the people who caused the circumstance, be it their work or their boss or their family or their spouse or their mom or their dad or their brother, whoever caused it, whatever it was, the aggressive driver who cut you off, whatever it is, we have two choices. So to do this, we have to apply some truth about trials. We have to have some new thinking enter into our thoughts. Because it's not going to happen naturally. It just doesn't. We go, oh, great. Something bad happened. This is very hard. This is very hard to change and adopt this perspective. And it happens over time. There are two truths here. God is sovereign over every trial. God is sovereign over every trial. There's kind of a view of God, and actually I used to think this way, that God kind of created everything and he set it in motion and he just let it go. There's good things and bad things because he gave us free will, and he let the good things go and lets the bad things go, and he's going to come back at the end and judge everything. He's going to take the books down of my life and your life and I'll open them up and go, okay, how'd you do? But in the middle, he's just kind of uninvolved. He's just up in heaven doing whatever you do up in heaven. But he's detached. And this is not the case. He is actively involved in our lives and events. He is all powerful. He can stop anything or he can allow anything he wants. It's a very different view. If God is choosing to allow certain things, even though some of them are wrong, even though some of them are hard, it's part of the system he made. He will use it. Another truth about trials is not that God is sovereign, is that he will use it for our good and for the good of others. We will not see in the moment what that is, but the faith that that is true brings a new perspective. This happened, I don't know if you ever read the book of Jeremiah. Jeremiah told God that he couldn't do this job he had for him. He said, I can't do this job. I'm not good at it. I can't do it. Right when God first introduced this idea to Jeremiah, you are going to be a prophet, he had a very tough job. He had a very hard message to bring to the nation of Israel. Very hard message. You're a wayward nation. God is going to judge all of you because of your worship of everything but God. And this is what God says, right when he says, this is your job, this is your role. Jeremiah, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were anything, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations. God knew Jeremiah's life. God knew what he wanted Jeremiah to do before he was even born, before his parents were married, before any of this. God had a plan for Jeremiah's life, and he was involved and he desired these things. Now, this is a message to Jeremiah, to his life. But if that's true for him, if that's how God works with people, is it different for you and for me? Is God far away and distant and have no plan and he's just letting things go? Or is it more like this? Did he set us apart? Did he set you apart where he has a plan for you and what he wants you to do and how he wants to interact with you, that he's going to use everything of today for the future? So we need to learn that God is sovereign. We need to understand that. We need to understand that. We're going to go back to James about learning endurance. James 1:3. I want to pick out a different word about this verse. I really like this word. I know I've picked on this before, but I think it's important. Because you know the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Because we have a very modern European teaching, college lecture style view of Christianity. We teach a lot of things. This word know is not, it translates, the Greek word is gnosko. And the English, a lot of times in English we think about the word know as to understand something. Yes, I understand that. I understand what you're saying. Thank you for explaining it to me. Now go away. The word gnosko doesn't imply that. It implies an experience with the understanding. You don't just know the information. You've experienced the truth of how it works. I don't know if you remember the story of Moses. When Moses was called to save the Israelites out of Egypt, he was very resistant to God. He objected 7 times. I can't speak. What if they don't listen to me? Who am I? Who am I to do this? Send somebody else. Send anybody else. Don't send me. He dialogued with God. Don't send me. I can't do this. But he experienced and he saw what God did over time. Saw God work in him in things we have never seen, miracles that have never been repeated. An amazing display of who God is. When the Israelites were fleeing Egypt, it was a different Moses. Different Moses. He experienced, he knew God was going to come through. The Israelites were petrified of the Egyptian army tracking them down. Chariots are coming down. They can see them coming. I don't know if there's a big cloud of dust, but I imagine a big cloud of dust, big army bearing down on you. And they're going, we're going to die. We should have stayed in Egypt. And Moses says, the Egyptians you see today, you will see no more. What happened to Moses? Same guy, same body, same mind. He experienced something different. This is what God is doing through trials, through hardship, through the test that we experience who he is and that we can trust him in a different way. A little more on gnosko. This is from John MacArthur. This little quote here. Some people do not understand the Bible because they do not believe it is true. Or at least, they don't believe that all parts are true. Others do not understand it. They have no experiential knowledge. This is what trials do. They create an opportunity for this. If life is totally easy, a cakewalk, we will forget who God is and that we need him because they are unwilling to obey it. We have several people here, high school students, who are in cross country. I think the cross country season just finished. And I want to use this as an example. I would like them to come up here, and I want to ask them a few questions about cross country and how this works. So let's see. I've got just two. Is that all we have? Anyone else? Is this mic on? Can I use this mic, Ben? Is that better? No speed. Sorry, I didn't plan that far ahead. Okay, so I have Abby and Aaron. So let's see. I'll hand this to you, Aaron, first. So, how long are your cross country races?
Like time wise.
In the microphone.
Like time wise.
No. Distance.
About 3 miles.
3 miles. Abby, how long are your cross-country races?
3 miles.
Oh. Okay. Now, you guys practice and train and up to the season's over, right, for both of you? For you two?
Yeah.
It's over. Yeah. So every week you guys had cross-country practice. How far did they make you run in practice?
Depends, like, on what day it is and what we're doing. So, depends on what day it is and stuff
okay.
like that.
Okay, so. Give me some examples. On Tuesday, how far did they have you run?
Like in the summer or like during the season? Because like, the numbers are actually pretty different.
Let's see.
In the summer.
In the summer is fine.
This is like, depends. Like near the end, we were running like 10 or 12.
10 or 12 what?
Miles.
Miles. Okay. 10 or 12 miles. Abby, how far did they have you run?
Like the farthest we ran was 10 miles.
10 miles. Now, this seems kind of dumb to me. I mean, honest. The race is 3 miles. Why run 10 miles? Why don't you just train for what you're doing? Just train for the 3 miles. Why bother? 10, that's a long way. My feet would hurt.
Well, you get, like, stronger from doing the 10 miles. So you get 3 miles better.
No, that's just her. What about for you? She's different.
That's the same thing. You just get a lot more endurance so that you can run 3 miles at a much faster pace than you would run 12 miles. So
you're saying that if you train more, you do better in the race. So what's your goal? Why are you guys in cross country? Why do you do these races? What do you want to do?
You want to run as fast as you can or train to run faster than that.
Seems kind of selfish, doesn't it? Just to run as fast as you can. What about you? What do you want to do?
You want to, like, be able to run fast, like you said. Winning is also nice.
Winning. So you want to be as good as you can be. And this training, now, is there any other training they did besides running 10 or 12 miles? Did they have you run anything besides 10 miles? Or?
Near the end of the season, we were doing sprint stuff mostly.
Okay. Why?
Because then near the end of the race or near the middle of it, it's helpful to be able to, you know, just like practice moving your legs that fast and then, you know, kind of get some of the form down, things like that.
What about your team?
Yeah, well, like sprints and stuff and also like intervals that are a mile or like half a mile.
Why all this variety? Just run 3 miles. That's all it is. Why?
Because if you learn how to pace yourself differently at each point, it also kind of helps you think about, you know, if I can run in practice, if I can run, if we do 3 or 4 1-mile intervals and you run each of them in about 6 minutes, then you know that you probably should, in a race that's only 3 miles long, you know you probably should be running faster than six, your last mile and faster than 6 minutes. And so you can kind of, if you have someone calling times to you, you can kind of gauge how much you probably have left and then where you can go from there, pacing-wise.
Thank you. Thank you both. I did not prep either of them, so I put them both on the spot. Thank you. The reality is in training, in athletics, we do all types of training. Coaches do all types of training for all types of situations that they are conditioned to do the best in the race. They'll have them run long, they'll have them run short, but they're conditioned through, so they do the best they can in the race. It's the same in our Christian lives. this basis of trials, this way God uses, he is conditioning us to do well in the race of our lives, in the race of Christianity. And so I appreciate it. Thank you guys for both coming up. So, to be a runner, to live a Christian life, here's the bad news. Discipline. You have to be disciplined. They train every week. They train every day, except for the day they race. Writer of Hebrews, endure hardship, endure trials as discipline. As discipline, God is treating you as his children. For what children are not disciplined by their father, God is moving you into a new place. No discipline seems pleasant at the time. This is the truth. The writer of Hebrews is honest. We don't like this. We don't enjoy it. You have to consider it valuable. What is God trying to have me learn? Why am I going through this again? I may not have learned it last time. What is God trying to teach me? It's not pleasant, but painful later on, however. It produced a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained. The implication for those who have been trained by it, it's like being a long-distance runner. It trains you. There's enduring results, not results today, just for today, not that you just feel good today, but this has an effect for the rest of your life. This is what trials do, because they change your perspective. They're significant enough to get your attention, to get my attention, to get everyone's attention, that they change our perspective. Let's see. The Apostle Paul had a lot of difficulties. He had a lot of trials. He had very big trials. I just want to look at the way he talks about his life and how he was persecuted and the difference of how he considered it. We are hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed. We always carry around in our body of death, the death of Jesus, so the life of Jesus may be revealed. For we who are alive are always being given over to death. These are pretty strong words. If you focus on the circumstance, it'd be pretty easy to be discouraged. Wow, why am I going through this? He says God is using it. We're pressed, we're perplexed, but not in despair. We're persecuted, but not abandoned. I have hope in what God is doing. This takes faith. It does not happen in our natural self. This takes faith in God. So one of the secrets here, he says this, therefore we do not lose heart. How do you not lose heart? He says, inwardly, we're dying here. We're wasting away. I'm giving everything I have. But inside, I'm being renewed every day. Inside, my heart is being renewed. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving an eternal glory. These struggles are doing something. He had faith in that. And part of the solution, we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. This is important. If your hope is in the circumstance, when the circumstance doesn't go right, you'll be crushed. You'll feel abandoned. You'll feel despair. So this is how God uses trials. We've talked about these three purposes. To test your faith, to cause you to grow in perseverance, that you keep going, that you're still encouraged, that you trust God, and to help us to mature. Really, to change our lives for the better by trusting not in our circumstance, in our Him, but in Him. No other religion can offer this to you. If you look at the Middle Eastern religions, you know what they offer to you? They offer divisions to separate you from your emotions. Little walls inside yourself. Remember transcendental meditation? All those Eastern things that sound kind of cool sometimes. They just separate you and have you put your emotions in little boxes so you're numb. God offers you peace and purpose. Why don't we have the music team come up and we'll pray together here. God, thank you that you waste